Stay calm, don't panic. You got this.
Hey, welcome back to the podcast. This is Carly Duke, and sitting with me is Chris Roby.
Hello.
And we are excited to start and kick off part two of this conversation around suicide. So hopefully you caught our last episode with Dr. Becky Taylor, and if you didn't, we would really encourage you to go listen as she talks about preventative, how to prevent, and just kind of risk factors for teenagers who are attempting or considering suicide. But today we have a new guest, Leslie Culver, and we're so excited for the insight that she brings both personally and the work that she's done in Tarrant County around where we live, around the Fort Worth area. And she actually founded a program, or I guess it's a program called the Lost Team of Tarrant County, and it's a part of Mental Health America of Tarrant County. And they get to go and be that first response. If you can call them anytime, and they're going to come show up at your house. They release this team to talk with the family and to be there for survivors of suicide, especially.
Well, and what's important to note about what the Lost Team does and how forward thinking it is it's kind of falls under what is called postvention. So postvention is kind of like what it sounds. It is trying to support and kind of bring up the rear, so to speak, of families who have experienced some kind of loss, and especially when it comes to those who have experienced death by suicide of a loved one. And she gets into this a lot in this interview about why that's so important. And as you talk to people in our area, and they find out about what Lost Team does, they're like, "What? I didn't know that existed." Mm-hmm. And you know, we need to know that, you know, as people are dealing with that in our county. And so it's a really amazing program. Leslie's got lots of energy.
Yes, she does.
She does. She'll wake you up. She's awesome. So I really enjoyed the time I got to spend with her.
Yeah, so we're really excited for you to hear this interview. And whether or not you are a survivor of suicide, or if you know someone who has died by suicide, this is a great perspective for how we can step alongside with families and those who have lost a loved one by suicide. So check out this interview and then stick around after for some wrap up and some closing thoughts from Chris and I. So we'll see you after the interview.
Guys, welcome. We're glad that you joined us this week. We have Leslie Culver with us here at the podcast, and we're going to talk. We've got a couple parts. We're going to talk about suicide, kind of a heavy subject, but we want to talk to the helper, anyone who does work with teenagers, about how do we handle suicide, talking about suicide. Leslie's a great person to talk about that. I think the way we talk about these issues is really important, even the language that we use, and we'll spend some time talking about that. But then we'll talk a lot about, you know, how do you, as a survivor, and we'll talk about what that means, how do you kind of move forward with that. So Leslie, welcome.
Thank you.
Glad that you're here. So real quickly as we get started, how prevalent are suicide attempts amongst teenagers?
Well, as far as suicide itself, it's the number three cause of death between ages 15 to 24. And that is after accidents at number one and homicides at number two. So the number three cause of death. When you ask for attempts, that's really, really hard to answer because of HIPAA. They're not reported. There's not really a database that you can have gather the attempt information. Also, with these kiddos from age 15 to 24 or teenagers, overdoses, sometimes the question is, was it really an accidental overdose or was it a suicide attempt? And so that as far as the attempts and trying to really get the numbers on that, it's very, very hard.
Right.
But it's probably much higher than anyone thinks.
Right.
Yeah.
So for those,
go ahead.
For those who aren't counselors or trained in how to talk about suicide, what are some terms or descriptions that can be used that can make this conversation as healthy as possible?
Yeah, okay. So for terms that can be used with, say, an adult talking to a teenager.
Right.
You know, and this is not a this is not a term you would use professionally, but do not freak out when as the person talking to the teenager. That's kind of my first thing. What that teenager tells you, as you both know in your field, you have to listen to what they're going to say, and it can be very hard, but you can't freak out. That's really the main thing. Terms using talking with the teenager, you know. In the past, people thought if you asked, are you suicidal, that that could maybe cause that person to go and try to kill themselves.
Like a trigger or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it is not. It is not. All of the research shows that asking someone if they are considering suicide helps that person, because then it opens the dialogue of what is going on with that that teenager. And then it allows a conversation to start. And that leads into other things we'll talk about later. Okay, so if someone does say yes, then how does that layperson, the counselor, the neighbor, you know, how do they handle that from then on? So we can always talk about that in a little bit. You were just saying more terms.
Right. And even how have these changed? I know we talked a little bit about earlier about that we're wanting to move away from the language of completed or committed suicide.
Yeah.
And so what is the reasoning behind that? What do we use now instead of those terms?
Right. Completed or committed. The powers that be in this industry, they feel it's very, very those words are very strong, and you complete something, and you know that's a good thing, to complete your schooling or complete the pass. When you're committed to something, that's very, very positive. And so they wanted to get away from that and just really get down to what it is. And it is, did that person try to kill themselves? Did that person die by suicide? So it's really just getting down to what it is, and using the terms to describe, and not use it more in a positive way.
In some ways, it seems like that's the way that we avoid having to talk about it, you know?
Yeah.
A little bit.
Exactly.
I heard a talk one time about a lady, you know, we say people passed away. Or, you know, and we never want to say they died, because then you have to deal with it.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's almost a little more harsh. You know, they died. You know, or instead, well, it was suicide. But instead, oh, well, they you know, completed, or they committed, or, you know, so just exactly what you said.
So with an attempt, if they make an attempt but are not successful.
Yes.
Is that the right terminology there?
Yes,
or is that,
absolutely. Okay. Attempt. And So that's where people get confused, where a suicide survivor is someone like myself who's lost family members to suicide, and then a person who's attempted suicide, of course, is someone who's attempted and did not die by that attempt. Now, one thing you may be hearing, this has just kind of come out the last 12 to 18 months, is called lived experience. So someone who has attempted, instead of saying this person is a suicide attempter or I'm an attempter, it's I have a lived experience of trying to die by suicide. But just the lived experience is a word that's now being floated around the suicidology research and conferences and things like that.
Right.
Lived experience.
Yeah.
I don't know how I'd fit that into.
I know.
I mean, I understand the concept of it, but
Well, and what's also, there's an organization called the American Association of Suicidology. And attempters have really been trying to find a voice with AAS, American Association of Suicidology, because it is kind of the end-all be-all with conferences and research and information regarding suicide. Mm-hmm. There are others out there that are just as good. AFSP, I don't want to say there's not others out there, but as far as AAS is concerned, that's been my most experience with a big organization. Mm-hmm. So the attempters now, you will see at, say, the AAS conference this year, you will see a lot more talks, a lot more research, and on the lived experienced, there was, because they really want a voice. Mm-hmm. They want to be out there talking about their experience and what it did to them. Mm-hmm. So
for preventative,
absolutely,
Yeah.
They're there to prevent someone attempting or dying by suicide. Obviously, okay. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So, you know, along those lines, you know, how should we respond or talk to those who have attempted or, I guess, died by suicide? I mean, how does that conversation start?
Okay, so you're asking me, for example, I would say kiddo, even though they may be 16, mm-hmm. kiddo. Yeah. So kiddo who's 16, who's maybe attempted. Mm-hmm. Okay, and now you're going to be talking to this child.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, well, the first thing is, ask about their experience. Ask how they felt once they took the pills, mm-hmm. or maybe attempted to tie a rope. You know, I'm being a little graphic here, and tell me if I'm too graphic.
Nope, you're fine.
Tying a rope to the ceiling fan. You know, how did they feel? And then once they were doing this and they did not succeed, mm-hmm. which is, how did they feel? Did they feel ambivalent? Mm-hmm. Did they feel, because a lot of research shows that people who attempt and survive, that they come back and say the minute they tried to kill themselves, they felt like, I don't want to do this. They felt that ambivalence. Mm-hmm. There was a research study done on people who jump off the Golden Gate Bridge. And that's the most, that's the number one spot where people go to die by suicide, is the Golden Gate. But they will fly there. They will literally fly there, drive wow. there, and pick the Golden Gate Bridge. Hmm. And the few that survived did say the minute they jumped off, they had ambivalence about dying. Hmm. They felt it. So as far as talking to a kiddo, if they did feel that, what were the reasons they felt that? Mm-hmm. The positive things. Mm-hmm. Did you feel the love of your family? Did you not want to leave your friends? Did you feel all the things that maybe you felt weren't there at the time you wanted to die, but then you knew they were there? Mm-hmm. You knew there was hope. You knew there was that you were not a burden. Mm-hmm. You knew you weren't helpless. To really focus on the positive in their life, mm-hmm. with that.
Yeah.
Now, as far as watching someone who has attempted, watch for the risk factors. You know, watch, and that's another, you know, there's a lot of risk factors out there. But, you know, once you've had an attempt, you know, that's a risk factor for a future attempt.
Yeah, isn't there a stat on that? Like, just how and I'm probably putting you on the spot on that. But
well, I know, I don't have that stat as far as exactly, but if I always tell the story of if there's a person who's tried to die by suicide, say they've tried 15 times, they've had 15 attempts and have never died. Mm-hmm. And then here comes Sue, who's going to attempt. So say the person who's, you know, say Mary, who's tried 15 times versus Sue, who's going to try the first time, who do you think will die? Most people in the audience say, well, Mary will, Sue will, because she's going to try the first time, and Mary's tried so many times, it's never going to happen. Mm-hmm. Well, it's the research shows it's going to be Mary, because she's finally going to do it. It's finally going to happen. Mm-hmm. And most people say, oh, it's a cry for help, especially if you've had that many attempts. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in my work, I've seen so many that they've had multiple and multiple attempts, and they have died by suicide. Mm-hmm. It's not the cry for help or wanting attention, that kind of thing. I hope I may have gotten off on a side note on that.
Nope,
so
you're good.
So what are, especially if they've attempted in the past?
Yes.
What specifically for those people, for those teenagers, can family, friends, supporters be looking for?
Really all the risk factors initially, but it would obviously, hopefully they were in therapy or hospitalization immediately. Mm-hmm. Medication needs to be looked at and continue to be looked at over the years. It could have been a situational experience for this teenager. So this may not be a lifelong on medication. Or it could be this teenager has a diagnosed mental illness, and this is going to be a lifelong situation that they have to look at these risk factors. Mm-hmm. Just again, looking at are they isolating again if they were doing that before, substance abuse issues. If they are on meds, make sure that they're taking their meds. Mm-hmm. Adults as well, but teenagers, they'll go on and off those meds all the time. Mm-hmm. And think, oh, I'm doing fine. Let's chunk the bottle and not tell anyone. Mm. You know, make sure they're, you know, be vigilant about that as a parent. As anyone else, any other person in their life, just to be there for them and really just keep an eye on them. I mean, just keep an eye that they are coming to school, doing their work, not gaining a ton of weight at one time or losing a ton of weight at one time. Mm-hmm. Changing friends, all the things that go along with those, kind of those risk factors that could be before mm-hmm. such an attempt, but really focus on keeping them in therapy as long as that therapist thinks they need to be in therapy. Because mm-hmm. when you try to take your life, that is a huge, huge deal. Mm-hmm. And I've seen some people that they won't even go get therapy after that. And I'm just a strong believer in if you're going to take your life, you need to be monitored mm-hmm. by someone and someone outside the family. So that's where someone can help. If the family's not, sometimes the family structure's not conducive to helping the child. So then if the church steps in or the counselor at high school steps in to really watch that child and ask that child if they're getting the help that they need.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the family for a second.
Yeah.
The effects on families and friends of people who have either attempted or died by suicide.
Yeah.
What are they going through?
Oh.
Because I really feel like in all these stories you hear, that's, I don't know if it's, we don't want to deal with that because it would be so hard to even think about what they're going through. But,
yes.
You know,
what are the first thing, the stigma, people do, and it's getting better. It is getting better. But the stigma of someone dying by suicide in your family, it's much different than any other type of death. Mm-hmm. And I always say it's the no casserole death because no one's going to bring the casseroles to your house like they do with any other death. Hmm. And I also heard another thing someone spoke one time and said, it's the you don't get the death buffet that you do with other types of death. They don't bring the food. They don't bring the buffet to your house. Mm. And it really, I saw that with my sister. I saw people stand, you know, people would call other people to talk, but not call me or not, you know, not bring the casseroles, you know, because they don't know how to do it. It's such a different type of death that it's really, really hard for people to, engage with people that have had that happen. Mm-hmm. They don't know what to say. Or you don't know what to say about any death.
Right.
But especially suicide. It's just so, it's like, I heard recently, and this was just this past weekend, that a friend said to another friend, you know, we're in the same boat. We've both lost children. Well, one was by suicide and one was by cancer. And the friend who lost the child by cancer said, I'm not in that same boat. I am not in that same boat. And mm-hmm. she was upset that this woman was putting her loss with her loss because one was suicide and one was cancer.
Didn't want to be associated with that.
Mm-mm. Hmm. So we're really fighting that, but I think it's getting better, mm-hmm. the stigma.
And that's just so crazy because from a family perspective, from a friend perspective, that is a loss for you. It does not matter how that happened. You lost someone that you loved, whether that was by accident or by suicide. So how can we support and encourage these survivors?
Talk about it. That's the most important thing, is to really talk about it. Talk about it. Well, first talk on a micro level. Talk with the family. Say their son Joe died by suicide. Tell the stories about Joe that you loved. Say his name. It's weird. Some people won't say the deceased's name when it's been a suicide. That's been some things that families told me. They won't say his name. They won't say her name. You know, really say, you know, I just remember when Joe did this and he was such a great kid, or he was this, just like you would with any other death.
Right.
You know, talk to them, check in with them, check in with them like you would any other death down the road. You know, not just the week of the death, but a month, 2 months, 3 months. Of course, I'm in this industry, but, you know, on the day that someone has died, many times I will call that family. And they are so appreciative because they're like, you know what? No one else, even my family, has remembered today. So that's something.
Anniversaries and really important.
Very important. Very important. But again, the day someone died, again, that's the stigma of bringing it up. And I don't want to bring it up in case she's having a good day. She knows what day it is.
Yeah.
He knows what day it is. Right. Yeah. You know, all that's going to do is help, you know, help them, is making that phone call. Also, your question, 40%, it's about 40% of people who have lost someone to suicide in their family, they will also lose someone else to suicide in their family. Or they're 40% more likely.
Wow.
Yeah. And you will see that in families. For instance, I'm that part of that statistic because my mother died by suicide and then my sister died by suicide. So I have that in my family. So talk about being hypervigilant with my child, you know, to watch for all the risk factors that we're talking about and that kind of stuff. Because when you've seen that in your family, there's really two reasons. Modeling, you know, well, mom was depressed, getting divorced, this and that, and she got out of her pain that way. Or the majority of the time is mental illness that runs in the family. That is the big one, is that you will see depression run in the family, bipolar, borderline personality disorder. That's people felt my mother had that before it was really people diagnosed it. My sister also had borderline. So that is a big part of suicide in a family. And now I'm on my soapbox, and please stop me.
Jump up there, you're good.
and other, I know other people out there will disagree with me, and until I see a research study, but I truly believe there's not a suicide gene. Now, people are studying it, and there has been one study that was not the best study done, but I truly feel there's not a suicide gene. But it is behavioral and environmental, and you've lost someone in the family. You have mental illness, that kind of thing. So I just want to throw that out because sometimes people feel if they have this legacy of suicide in their family, then that's how they're going to die.
Yeah,
and I totally disagree with that. But I can't be subjective.
No.
Yeah. So being a survivor, it's hard for me to be subjective on that.
Right.
So
I appreciate you talking about just the discomfort people feel about talking to the family. And I don't know how people get over that other than just getting over it, you know,
exactly.
because it's really,
hard.
Yeah, it was really hard, but it's dealing with your own stuff in some ways before you get like, why am I uncomfortable with this? And what's the worst that could happen here? You know,
exactly.
But you know, these people need someone who will come in and talk to them and you know, being scared of saying the wrong thing or, even the rejection, like, because sometimes you're scared you're going to go in and they're like, I don't want to talk about it.
Right.
But that fear will keep people from talking to them about it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Oh.
And I don't know. I mean, have you helped anyone to get past that other than just.
You know, I think as Mental Health America of Greater Tarrant County and having Lost Team under their umbrella, they've been excellent with really helping just get people out there talking about it. Mm-hmm. The Run for Life that we do every year for people to come out and really celebrate their loved one's life, which is so awesome. People come out with t-shirts and in memory of, and you know, like the Komen race where, you know, I run in honor of my mother who died mm-hmm. of breast cancer. You know, we have, I run in memory of my son, so-and-so, or my mm-hmm. this. And so it's getting it out there and putting it on the t-shirts, and that race has grown every year, mm-hmm. which has been wonderful. And people coming out and really remembering their loved one who died by suicide. So I think we really are chipping away at that. Mm-hmm. And along with that goes chipping away at the stigma of mental illness, mm-hmm. because so many times that's the reason for a suicide. And that I'm seeing the people coming out recently, the actors and actresses, about their mental health mm-hmm. and, you know, talking about how they do have depression and they have suffered from anxiety and all those things. So I think we're gradually getting there, mm-hmm. but it's just talking about it. Mm-hmm. And like the Jordan Elizabeth Harris Foundation, Jordan took her life, and, you know, they have a luncheon every year, and it's their tagline is bring the conversation to light, mm-hmm. to talk about mental illness and talk about suicide. So again, it's just getting out there and, you know, talking to people about it, taking them to a lunch, mm-hmm. taking them, you know, to learn more about it. And sometimes, like you said, people are uncomfortable, just their own fears
mm-hmm. yeah.
of what's going on.
I think that's one of the biggest, maybe I'm just speaking personally, but that's always my biggest thing, is being able to address what's going on here inside me before, you know, if I'm not having the conversation I know I need to be having.
Right.
You know, I'm not being lazy.
No, yeah.
it's like, I might actually be scared of this.
Exactly.
You know?
Which is so normal.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally normal. Yeah.
Well, how do you think churches and schools can respond and be positive, whether a student has attempted or has actually taken their life by suicide? How can these organizations, these schools where teenagers spend a lot of their time, respond?
Well, and again, it's probably hard to – I'm not really Pollyanna-ish, but it's hard for me to be objective really in Tarrant County, because I think we do a great job with that, with schools and churches being involved. Your organization is a perfect example, because when some kids have tried to take their life within the Tarrant County area, or if they have taken their life, you guys have come along. Teen Life has come along. Do you go by Teen Life or Teen Lifelines?
Teen Life.
Okay, you can edit that out.
That's all right.
Teen Life has come along.
It's interchangeable, really.
Okay.
But, yeah.
I just want to make sure and say it right, because I always say Teen Lifelines. Yeah. But when a situation has happened, when a horrible, tragic situation has happened, for example, everyone in Tarrant County seems to be really interactive with each other. And I think that is key. Mm-hmm. So if there is a loss, and I can use Pascal High School as mm-hmm. an example, they've had some losses, too many, and they knew they needed help. I know they reached out to Teen Life. Mm-hmm. They reached out to our local mental health authority. They reached out to Mental Health America. They have their own excellent counseling program and child life specialists child intervention specialists. But they all work together. Mm-hmm. So I think the most important thing is, don't be a silo. I mean, you can't just be these separate things and handle it by yourself, uh-huh. especially with suicide. Uh-huh. I mean, this is, I always say, we're not selling shoes here. Uh-huh. You know, this is life or death.
Right.
And so really what I'm saying is, and I've seen it with churches and I've seen it with schools, is to reach out to every person that they can think to in the community to come together and to help at that time. Uh-huh. And even though there's some overlap, what does that hurt? Uh-huh. That doesn't hurt anything. So, and I've been amazed at how everyone is ready to help where they need to go immediately.
Right.
So again, if this is happening in your school, if this is happening in your church, get on it immediately get people there to the school, the church. For example, I know Fort Worth ISD has what's called safe rooms. Uh-huh. I'm sure you're familiar with after, say, a death of a student of any type of death, that they can come and they can talk to someone, they can do art projects, they can just let the, you know, let their feelings out in whatever way they want to. But also, again, bringing in other
people. And this is right after the death, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes, right after the death, yeah. Yes. And then having an event to talk about this. Like, for example, Pascal did, Pascal, no more. Uh-huh. I mean, no more suicides, right. No more suicide attempts. And they got out to the faith community with this. They reached out and they got everyone from the faith community to come in and plan this out. And they also got, again, MHMR, which is the local mental health authority of Tarrant County, MHA. They got some psychiatric hospitals. It was just an amazing event. And there were over 150 people there. And some people will say, only 150 people there? That's huge.
That's huge, yeah. Yeah.
Because we've both been to schools where there's not many people there. And they're going to continue that. They're not just going to do that if there's a loss. That's another thing. If there hasn't been a loss, this needs to be discussed too. Don't wait for something to happen.
Right. Don't wait until after something has already happened to start talking about it.
And that's what we see all the time, unfortunately. It would be good to have it constantly going on, constantly talking about it. Have those events every year. Even though there has not been a loss, it still needs to be talked about. And it's not going to plant anything in any kiddo's head to go do it. Mm-hmm. It's going to do the opposite. They're thinking about it, it will help them.
For these churches and schools to bring in outside help, yeah. That's a courageous step on their part.
Yes.
Just in the sense that they're admitting that we do have a problem and need some help, you know?
Right.
And I feel like the churches and schools that don't, just it seems like they don't want to acknowledge it, or if it's just like it happened.
Yes.
and not talking about it almost is like an admission of we just, you know, either we're ashamed of this or. Which might be too strong. I don't know.
No, you're exactly right, and you kind of don't want to say that, but it's true. Mm-hmm. They don't want for people to think there's something wrong within their church or school. Also, with schools, sometimes they like to keep it very contained because of let's not go to that school. Mm. You know, two people died by suicide at ABC University, you know, and it was, you know, talked about and all this, let's go to another school. Or the parents are scared because there's been some suicides there. Well, mm-hmm. There's probably been some suicides at XYZ University, right. But they may have been not as publicized because they didn't have to. Mm-hmm. A lot of times private schools do not have to publicize. I mean, it's public record and all that, but they can really, they have their own, well, they all have their own police force, but sometimes I've seen more with the private schools that they've kept it more under the radar, mm-hmm. so to speak. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of that goes back to they want kiddos to look at their school and come to the school, but it happens at every school.
Right.
Every school. Yeah.
Well, this has been great, and thank you so much for your insight and for the information and the stories that you've shared, too, from personal experience. So we're so thankful that you came on the show with us. But before we wrap up, we have two more questions,
yes.
Two final questions. And the first one is, what is one thing you would like a teenager who is in the past or is currently considering dying by suicide?
What would I like for them to do?
Or what would you like to tell them? Is there a place that they can go for help?
What would you say?
Yeah, okay, number one, if they are considering suicide and they have a plan, crisis team, crisis line number immediately. I mean, that's 1-800-273-TALK. 1-800-273-TALK.
That's national.
National. Mm-hmm. That is the national hotline. If they're alone and they're considering that, they need to call that immediately. Mm-hmm. If you are with that teenager and they do an outcry to you and they have a plan, you know, immediately call, get him or her into treatment, and call the parents. If it's a psychotic break type of thing where 911 needs to be called, parents are scared to call 911, especially on someone else's child. Mm-hmm. But if that child may be, you know, going to kill themselves that night, and they have a plan, sometimes 911 is the call to make. Mm-hmm. Also, we have, this is national, but locally, and I know nationally people have it in the bigger cities, they have a local crisis team. So, for example, Tarrant County has a local crisis team through our local mental health authority. Mm-hmm. And that would be the number to call immediately to, is because they would send out a team within 45 minutes to talk to the teenager and see where they're at and what needs to be done and get a plan done for that teenager. Right.
It's probably good practice if you work with teenagers regularly to go ahead and have these numbers.
Absolutely, yes.
In your phone and kind of know where those are.
And if you ever talking about suicide, that's one thing that you may be noticing with things in the paper and all that. They'll always bring up this hotline, because if you're going to talk about it, you've got to give a number or a resource for that person if they are triggered and they mm-hmm. need to make a call.
Yeah.
So you'll usually see the 1-800-273-TALK. Mm-hmm.
So if you're listening right now, go find that resource, put it in your phone.
Yes.
I mean, the national hotline and then whatever local resources, just push pause, go find that, put it in your phone so you can have that available if that happens. So last question for you. Mm-hmm. What's one thing you would want, and this is kind of goes along with what we were saying, but what's one thing you would want a helper, and basically anyone who does work with a teenager, to hear from what we talked about today?
That they may be the only one in that teenager's life that can help them at that moment, mm-hmm. and to really go with their gut and don't be scared if they're not the parent, but that child is suicidal, and to make a call to help that child. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, the most important.
Yeah.
This is the university for us, for the student scholars, for the tenacious ones who seek to discover new depths in their field, for the pioneers in math, theology, nursing, and education. This is the university for those seeking truth in every discipline. This is the university for you, Lubbock Christian University.
Okay, Carly, as we kind of come out of this interview, some things come to mind. One of them is, and we did this, I remember we did this with Sally Gary last season, is kind of defining terms when we talk about something that is culturally sensitive or maybe taboo isn't the word, but I mean, it's treated as taboo sometimes, but talking about something that's difficult. Okay. Sometimes we slap words on that actually end up causing more harm. And don't really bring to light what's going on. And the common term is committed suicide. I mean, that's in the vernacular of most people. But those in suicide research, and as she said, kind of the powers that be in that field are shifting more towards died by suicide, mm-hmm. to kind of take to understand what ended up happening and to not assign a necessary like a morality to it. Because we don't know what happened a lot of times and what drove that person to that, but is saying that's how they died. Mm-hmm. And to at least going into death, give some dignity to the person who did die by that, which is, there's a lot of viewpoints on that. But I think that it's helpful to know, to especially for those who have survived. And that's another term that she talks about is being a suicide survivor, and that's, just being the ones who have to kind of live in the aftermath of the death by suicide. So these are typically family members, friends, close acquaintances to the one who died by suicide. So this is a new way of talking. And I know as I talk about this, and I haven't been formally trained in it, but been around it enough to know we say die by suicide.
Right.
And it's a big change if it's something you said your whole life.
Right. And it's something that I've struggled with of when we talk about it. I go to committed suicide. That's mm-hmm. just my go-to because that's what I've said and that's what I've heard other people say too. And so, but it's not necessarily the end of the world if I say that, but correcting myself and just really attempting to use the language that's going to be most helpful mm-hmm. for someone, for a survivor, someone that's attempted suicide. But saying that died by suicide, death by suicide, we're not tiptoeing around it. And it sounds harsh,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to use those words.
Well, and some might say that's, you know, it's PC, you know, we're overly correcting our language, but we are, and I mean, our words matter and the way we talk about things does matter. And, you know, we bring some kind of dignity to someone who died in a place where they didn't feel like they had it. And we bring comfort to those who are behind by the way we talk about these things and addresses the way that, you know, kind of the language of our hearts too, and how we think about that person. But like you said, I think that's a good point. We say what it is. When you say committed suicide, it's almost like you don't want to say it.
Right.
But you have to acknowledge its finality by how you talk about it.
Right. And I love Leslie's perspective because she is coming from personal experience of being a suicide survivor. Mm-hmm. And so she's not just saying this of, not only has she walked this path with countless families, but she went through it herself. And so mm-hmm. the advice, the tips that she's giving are coming from a place of she knows.
Mm-hmm.
She knows how it felt. And I thought, I had just never even thought about that no casserole death mm-hmm. is what she said, of when you have a family member or a child that died by suicide, people tend to avoid you mm-hmm. rather than if they died in another way, in another accident or an illness, where they bring food and they comfort and they come to the funeral and they talk about them. But when there's a suicide involved, it tends to be, oh, I'm kind of going to stay away from that. I don't know how to handle that.
Mm-hmm. Which, and it's really sad because it's kind of double punishment in some ways. You know, I mean, you've lost, I mean, set aside the reason, but you lost someone that you love and then no one comes around
yeah.
because they're uncomfortable with it. And I, you know, working in churches for a long time, I know churches struggle with this too, because there is morality assigned to it too, that, and there's some difficulties that pastors have to navigate through, and just people don't want to talk about it or acknowledge that it happened. And so by not wanting to talk about it, we don't want to talk about the people who were left behind. And I think that's why I so enjoy what Leslie has done with Lost Team, because they're saying, no, we're not doing that. You know, that whatever the reason, this family deserves to be supported and have a community surrounding them and bringing them casseroles, so to speak.
Right. And I just want to bring up, because she said it, but I just want to reinforce, she said things like, talk about it with the family,
mm-hmm.
talk about that child, check on them. If it's a month down the road, don't forget about it just that day,
mm-hmm.
but check on them. Remember those dates, some things that we heard Beverly Ross say
mm-hmm.
in her grief interview. All those things apply to a family that has lost someone by suicide. Mm-hmm. And so say their name. Don't be afraid to say they died by suicide
mm-hmm.
because that family probably doesn't have a lot of people coming alongside of them who are willing to talk about it
mm-hmm.
and talk about what happened, but they probably need to talk about it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So for you to be that person, for you to be willing to get them help or find someone that can help them, if you don't think that you can be that person, it is really important that we support and walk alongside those families.
Mm-hmm. And if you haven't heard anything else from our two interviews with Dr. Taylor and with Leslie, is this stuff takes some courage to have these conversations, to be willing to go into the hard places with people, and courage to, with a student or someone that you know and love who is in a dark place, to be able to come out and say, are you thinking about killing yourself? Or to step into the world of a family who is grieving after someone is lost. Those both take incredible courage. You can't do that over Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tweet about it. You can't talk about it. You have to actually go and do it. Like, it's a doing thing. And you have to roll your sleeves up and step into that world. But I think on the flip side of that, as difficult as it probably is, there are very simple things that you can do. And this asking those direct questions, not being afraid to check on anniversaries, not be afraid of some tears, not be afraid if there is some pushback. But you are doing so, you're doing what you're doing in the hopes that you can be helpful. And the same rules apply. We talked, you know, Beverly, everything goes back to this Beverly conversation we had last season, but this, we're dealing with grief. You know, ask those good questions. Don't say trite things like, you know, God got another angel in heaven, and, you know, but like, you know, understand these are people who are hurting. Whether or not you want to deal with the reasons behind death by suicide, you still have the opportunity to comfort and bring a casserole with you. Casserole's great. Yeah,
exactly. And I love just kind of at the very end when she talks about organizations and how I think she uses the term, don't be a silo. Of you don't have to stand alone. One organization, Teen Life, doesn't have to be the end-all be-all for suicide. Mm-hmm. But we can partner with other organizations. And the same applies for individuals. Mm-hmm. Don't feel like you have to do this alone. Mm-hmm. Don't feel like you have to be the one person for that family. But bring in some other family. Bring in some other friends. And work with your church body or work with the school or work with an organization to say, we're going to be your people. Mm-hmm. And don't feel like you have to step in and have all the answers right away either.
And likely in your community, wherever you're listening to this, there's someone doing this well.
Right.
Whether or not it is your church or it is your school or it is a community organization, a nonprofit, local university, someone is doing this well. And so doing that work to find out, you know, if I know someone who dies by suicide or know of someone, who can I bring in to help? Who can support? There's probably someone doing it really well, like the Lost team.
Exactly. Here.
Yeah. So, Carly, this was great. We really want to thank Dr. Taylor and Leslie Culver for being a part of this conversation, all the expertise they added. Give us your feedback, comments. Tell us what you think. Share some stories with us, how this has impacted you. And we will see you guys next week.
The Don't Panic podcast is produced by Teen Life and Ricky Lewis. Your hosts are Chris Roby and Carly Duke. The intro music you heard today comes from Under the Chandeliers. You can find them on SoundCloud or Spotify, so go take a listen. If you want to check out today's notes and resources, visit our website, don'tpanicpodcast.org. Or you can find us on Twitter or Instagram at Don't Panic Talk. Thanks for listening, and remember, don't panic. You've got this.